Okay, so today we're going to do a little piece of a mimer of the Alter Rebbe. Which has to do with Rosh Hashanah and incorporates a couple of fundamental concepts of Rosh Hashanah, which we're also going to extrapolate on. Point out, of course, that this Thursday is specifically connected to the Alter Rebbe. This Thursday is Chai Elul, the 18th of Elul, which is the birthday of the Baal Shem Tov and the birthday of the Alter Rebbe. They share a birthday. Many other things happen on that day, but the Baal Shem Tov also revealed himself on that day, and so on. There was a time actually in Chabad history where it was a little bit hidden, this Yantiv. And then the Rebbe Rashab and the previous Rebbe started to make it more accessible. In other words, they revealed what it was, and the Rebbe made a very, very big deal of it. Okay. So it's nice to learn something from the Alter Rebbe, being that it's his birthday on Thursday. So I'm going to go a little bit inside, but I want to give an introduction which is taken from. In fact, a few days ago, I heard Rabbi Yoel Kahn explain this. It's famous concepts, but he always explains things very structured and very beautiful and very well summarized. So I'm going to take it from him and break it down. So one of the themes of Rosh Hashanah, in Chassidus at least, I mean, really all people are saying, but Chassidus places a huge emphasis on this and explains it in a very specific, unique way. Is this concept of Binyan HaMalchus, to build up the concept of Malchus, of sovereignty. When we say Malchus, you're also referring to one of the ten spheres, the last of the ten spheres called Malchus, right? And it's considered a very, very important thing. We do that through the tefillah, through the prayers, through the shofar, and so on and so forth. So let's break it down. What is the concept of a melech, right, a true king? So we don't really have such an analogy of a real king today, meaning even real kings weren't real kings. A real king in the Torah context means a true leader. Someone's a leader whose focus is the people, not himself, right? So even the kings who had, like the dictators and the czars and the kings of England and all that, they weren't real kings. They were kings, but not necessarily that they became kings. So let's go back in Tanakh and use an example of a king, the very first king the Jewish people had, which actually was not David HaMelech, it was King Saul. Right, King Saul. Okay. For whatever reason, he wasn't meant to be the ultimate king, the eternal king, that was given to David HaMelech, but we learn a lot about kingship from Saul HaMelech. So first of all, a king, by definition, is someone who is a person that is far greater, maybe infinitely greater, than the people he's going to lead. It's an important point that you'll see why later. How do we know this? By Shaul HaMelech, it says, when the Yidden asked for a king and Shmuel HaNovi was going to choose Shaul HaMelech according to Hashem's instructions, it says about Shaul HaMelech, Mishichmoy ulemaylo govoya mikol am. From his head and shoulders were taller than everyone else. Now we know that in Chassidus, the concept there is that the body is a keli, a vessel for the spiritual powers of the soul. So we say that his head and shoulders were above everyone else. Doesn't mean just mean he was a tall person. It means that he's not only he was cleverer than other people, but even his entire being, meaning even his shoulders, even his heart, even his midos, in other words, were way above even everyone else's seichel. In other words, he was just a completely different league, right? Which that means that if, right, and that's a king. Because to be a king, to really lead a people properly, you need to be a leader. You have to be a true leader, and that means you need to be have the insight and the maturity and the greatness and the infinity to be able to really lead. But at the same time, because we're using Shaul HaMelech as a mushel, and then of course we're going to go to Hashem, which whatever we say by Shaul HaMelech is going to be by Hashem a million times more, right? So it also means that because the king is so great, Shaul HaMelech was so great, for him to become a king actually is an amazing downgrade. It's a downgrade. It's not a promotion, it's a downgrade. Because it means he has to descend from his level and relate to people that are not in his league altogether.
Lead people, not relate to.
Sorry?
But he's leading
Well, in order to lead them, he has to relate to them somehow. He has to understand them. He has to relate to them. He has to look into their needs. He has to, yeah, he's got to relate to them. There's a relationship between a king. It's some type of relationship, maybe. It's an aloof relationship, but still, it's a, he's worrying about and he's thinking about and he's leading people who are completely not in his league. Now, we see this by Shaul HaMelech. That's why a true king, we find this often by Tzaddikim as well, for whatever, sometimes you don't find it for whatever reason. There's different spiritual reasons, but you find that there's no rush to be a leader, right? Shaul HaMelech wasn't interested. He went to hide. Hashem had to tell Shmuel where to find him. Right? He wasn't interested. I was interested because it's a total yerida, it's a total downgrade. He has to descend into a level that is completely not in his league. Right? In order to lead them, he's got to go through the concept of what we call Bashem, the idea of Tzimtzum. In other words, he's going to have to, he can't relate to them as an equal because they're not equals. So he has to withdraw. So his leadership takes, on one hand, he stays separate. On the other hand, he uses the concept which we know called Malchus. Malchus is the ability to hold back what is not necessary, or hold back what is too difficult for the people to absorb, and lead by just letting in a little bit, showing a little bit, and let his leadership be felt. But that leadership that he allows to be felt is just a glimmer of what he really is. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, because the king is not interested in being a king, so how does he become a king? As a work. What motivates the king to become a king?
Sorry, it's only a glimmer of who he is because that's all they can relate to.
Correct. They understand that he's greater. In fact, part of the leadership, part of the authority, actually comes from the fact that they know this is like a different person. It's not some gardener that walked in, he wants to be the king. He's a different league. It's different. There's an awe about him. It says about a king, Shmoi Nikra Aleihem. Most people never see the king, but they know the king. You say, king this, oh, king. How many people actually saw King Shaul, for example, right? Okay, we have the Moshel of Elul, the king's in the field. But even then, he's hard to notice. But okay, then he comes, he's more, it's a whole other discussion. Okay, but generally speaking, the king is hidden. That's how he leads, because he's got to hold back if he would. The kingship would be ineffective if he just mingled with everyone, right? So how does he become a king? He has to be motivated to become a king. He has the leadership qualities, but they very... A king is someone, always like this, a king is not only someone who's a different league, a king is someone who's in a different league and he has the ability to turn that into leadership. That's very different, right? I mean, you can have other people that their insight or their intellect is far greater than anyone else, but it doesn't mean they can be a leader. A king is a double thing. He has to have an amazing greatness about him, which is far greater than the people, and have the ability to turn that into leadership. Which means the idea of tzimtzum and relating and descending, it's a quality.
I'm so sorry to labor this. I'm distracting. When we're talking about this as an analogy to God.
Yeah, we're going to get to God in a second.
So, is God hidden, or is it that we don't have the ability to perceive him?
Hidden, tzimtzum. He held himself back. That's the idea of tzimtzum.
He has held himself. It's not like it's just that.
No, it's a conscious thing. No. Hashem is always revealed before the world was created. If he left himself revealed, he wouldn't exist. It was a conscious choice to make a tzimtzum. That's what Chassidus talks about, the idea of tzimtzum.
Okay.
But before we get there, one second. So King Shaul, let's talk about King Shaul still, right? A human king. He's a great person. He has the power of leadership, but it's very unrevealed. In other words, deep down, he possesses that quality. But he's not interested. He's not interested in connecting with it because he's as happy the way he is. Right? So what motivates him? When the people come and they surrender to him, right? And they say, we are completely given over to you as a king, that bittul, that surrender to the king, somehow interests the king. Okay, if that's the case, then it's going to be worthwhile. In other words, then I'm ready to be your king. I'm not looking for this kind of thing, but I'm ready to be. If you let me be a king. So in other words, they have to evoke, they have to ignite within him the power of leadership. Yeah?
Now, I think one of the qualities, though, of a king or a leader, the ability to talk down to, like, I'm just thinking of like a rabbi who comes to a school. He can talk to the year ones and to the year 12s
correct,
and to adults.
Correct. That's why Hashem can relate to the malachim, he can relate to us, he can relate to us within us, different levels. True? But it's all, but he's higher than all of them. Okay. Not the rabbi, I mean,
yeah.
God. Or a king, a real king, right? Is that? Yeah. Again, we talk about Hashem, right? We talk about Hashem. It's much more than that. Again, it's much more than King Shaul. We talk about Hashem being in a different league. It's not just like that he's higher than, his intellect is higher than whatnot, right? It's what we call Hasidus Ein Aroich. It's like, right? He was and he is. We'll see why in a second. He is. We'll see in a second. He wanted it to happen, but he wanted it to happen like it happens by a regular king. It happens through his reluctance. We'll see why he wants it to happen. Like, what is he needed for? But it still happens the same way. This is a very deep part. This is part of Rosh Hashanah, right? So therefore, what was the world created for? We say that Hashem revealed the 10 spheres of Atzilus, right? Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, different things come from different spheres. But it all goes through Malchus. So the relationship between Hashem and us is Malchus. He's a Melech. That's the relationship. In fact, interestingly enough, the Malchus already started even before we existed. Because we say every day, Adon Olam, Asher Malach, master of the world, he ruled, but Terem Kol Yitzur Nivra, even before anything was created. There's a concept of Malchus even before the spheres. In other words, the power of Tzimtzum, the power to give room for something else that's not in my league. Yeah? So Hashem has very, very, so to speak, in his essence, in fact, after all said and done, we say that the power of Malchus is that power of Tzimtzum, and it's the lowest one of the Sefirot, in order to save it, take everything else and go through the process of Tzimtzum, so you let out the glimmer that needs to be let out, right? But actually, that power is its origin, it's rooted, is very, very, very high. That power to actually do the Tzimtzum, make room for something that's not you, is actually a very deep power. It's rooted in the essence of Hashem that he can do that. It's like he can be infinite, but he can also make room for, right? It's the feminine power. It's the power of Tzimtzum, by the way, is the feminine power. That's the power. In other words, the power to take the revelation and tailor-make it for birth. Right? As it says, Mashiach will come, the power of the feminine will be higher than the power of the masculine because the root of Malchus will be revealed. Yeah, okay. That's just a side point. So therefore the whole relationship between Hashem and us is one of Malchus. Now, the other part of Malchus is that the one you're a melech over, the one that you need to create this tzimtzum, the one that you need to hold back, is obviously not in your league. For example, a father can't become a melech over his children. That doesn't make any sense. A father can't be a king over his sons. It's got different relationships, a different relationship altogether. Right? Hold that thought. We'll come back to that towards the end. So we say there's a chazal that says, Ein melech beloy am. There's no king without a nation. You need a nation to have a king, right? And that nation means a person that will be surrendered to you, but they're not in your league. They're separate for you. That's where the concept of Malchus applies. Come here, melech of your brother, you come here, melech of your son. It doesn't make any sense. It's your world. Okay. Good. So therefore, we say that Hashem created the world through the process of Malchus. Now, the first time he created the world, he did do it without someone motivating him. That's true. But he doesn't want that to happen. He wants it to happen like the regular Malchus. And therefore, we learn in Chassidus that this amazing downgrade, this amazing Yerida that Hashem did, right? that he came down and he lowered himself. He lowered the process of Malchus to such a degree to create us. And he wanted to do that for whatever reason. Every Rosh Hashanah, says Chassidus, every Rosh Hashanah, just before the Shkia, just before sunset, Hashem withdraws his interest completely. Not interested anymore. He's resigning. Right? And what do? We have to remotivate him. How do we remotivate him? By crowning him as king. What does it mean, crowning him as king? Just making a ceremony? No. By completely giving ourselves over to him. Again. We do that every day, but Rosh Hashanah is a much, much deeper thing. Rosh Hashanah is about, according to Chassidus at least, it's about complete bittul. Complete. Absolute bittul. It's, I'm yours, I'm nothing, I'm completely given over to you, I'm completely surrendered to you. It's not even details. I don't care what you're asking me to do, I'm just yours. Later the specifics come. Later Hashem tells me, okay, if you mind, then I'll tell you what to do. And that's a serious mitzvah on Yom Kippur. But it's more not to the, we're not surrendering to the mitzvahs of Hashem, we're surrendering to Hashem himself. You're going to ask something?
Yes, why did he withdraw? Did you tell us that?
Yeah. Why did he withdraw? Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, because we have to renew the Malchus each year, because when we renew the Malchus each year, he becomes a Melech on a different level. And he draws down into the world a new light. It's actually one of these days of Tanya now that's learning in the Chitas, yeah. The daily Tanya is it's the last piece, just talked about this. It's based on a Pasuk. The Pasuk is actually talking about Israel. And the Pasuk says that Israel is in a land upon which the eyes of Hashem are always there. Mireshis Hashana ve'ad Achrishana. From the beginning of the year till the end of the year. Special Hashgacha. Says the Alter Rebbe, doesn't make sense, the Pasuk. If Hashem's eyes are always in Israel from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, that means they're always there. So just say, it's a land that Hashem's eyes are always upon the land forever. Finished. He says, no, because every year is different. And that applies to the whole world. And he brings this idea that every Rosh Hashanah before Shkia, the Hashem departs from the world and he's totally... But no, it doesn't just depart. It says departs very deeply. In other words, you can stop doing something, but you can still have a will to do it. For example, a person can be building a bookshelf, right? And he's building it at all levels. He wants to build it. He's excited about it. He plans it. He strategizes. And he actually builds it. Then he decides he wants to rest. So he's not interested in building it for the next hour. So you can say that's also a withdrawal of interest. But no, when you stop building, when I say I can't build it, I built till 12 o'clock in the day, I can't do it today. I'm not building anymore. Right? That means you just withdrew your action. But you still have an interest in it, right? When we say Hashem withdraws his Malchus from the world, it doesn't mean he withdraws the functionality of Malchus in the world. It means he withdraws it on all levels. It goes back to his essence. He's just not interested whatsoever. And it's up to us through total bittul, right? Through absolute bittul, through total bittul, to give ourselves over to him to such a point with a very deep bittul to his essence, which is the shofar, the tefillos, and the whole thing of the first time, right? That we reignite the rotzen to be, the desire for him to be our king. And then it goes to the whole Aseres Mitzvah. We build the whole structure of Malchus, but at its very core, because we've got to bring it down at all levels, all the spheres, and so on. But at its core, Rosh Hashanah. Right? In Chabad tradition, by the way, the first night Rosh Hashanah was the most serious of the whole 10 days. More serious than Yom Kippur. There were great Hasidim who used to daven for hours on the first night Rosh Hashanah.
Because you've got no Yom Kippur if you don't do this right.
Correct. You got to get it going. Right? Yeah, they would. Yeah. Previous rabbi used to. They say when he came to America once. When he came to America at the beginning of one of the years, in the very beginning, I think. He used to stay in shul and he would daven in shul way after the minyan, and people obviously wanted to stand around him to hear his davening. He would daven loud. And he gave permission to do that. He said, "But as long as people say tilim while they're not just standing listening to him, it's not a concert, right?" And I still remember him davening, and there was one Rosh Hashanah he davened for 5 hours, Ma'arif. Right? Okay? That's why Chassidim Rosh Hashanah would, especially first night, would minimize idle discussion and all these things. It was very, very focused, Rosh Hashanah. Until after Shofar, it was like very, almost scary, right? And as Richard Magid says, when he would daven Mincha on Erev Rosh Hashanah, He would cry like a baby because it was like someone saying goodbye to a very beloved one. He could sense it. He sensed the malchus. And the world is like comatose. It's like Hashem keeps it alive, but there's no interest there. Okay? Now, before we go a little bit further, let's learn a little bit inside to understand if it's such a downgrade for Hashem, if it's such a demotion, so to speak, so what was the point? So what do you need it for? Let's have a look. On the copy you have there, on the top, this is the part of the Maimer of the Alter Rebbe, and he says like this, Ach lahavi, in order to understand, yeah? Why is it such a descent? Why did Hashem descend so low? As I say in Yiddish, was fell to voice? What's he missing? What was the word? In Yadua, so we know that this Yerida is for the purpose of going even greater. What's the Pshat? What Hashem wanted to introduce and create was this idea of the amazing light that comes specifically from darkness. Which you have to have darkness first, right? That will come in the place of the physical darkness, an existence, a world that is so low that it's completely detached from Hashem in a visible way, in a conscious way, right? In other words, it's so far from this amazing light, which is complete bitul and incorporated in Hashem's reality. And what was the idea? The idea was that there should be the bitul of this yesh, which is to the ayin. What does that mean? So we know, we say that Hashem created a yesh ma'ayin, something from nothing. And Chassidus always asks the question, what does that mean, something from nothing? On the contrary, the thing, the creator is the something, the creation is the nothing, right? And therefore, we call it the other way around, we say something from nothing. What does that mean? It means like this. That in Hashem's revealed world, when He is revealed, without Tzimtzum, the world can be there, but it's ayin, it's nothing, it's completely bottled to Hashem, it's not an independent existence at all. What Hashem did was, from the ayin, from that bitul, He created a world through Tzimtzum, that's a yesh, meaning it exists on its own, it's an independent existence, so to speak, visibly, right, consciously. Yeah? And our job is to bring the yesh back to the ayin. Right? And that's the light that comes from the darkness. I don't mean back to the ayin in a physical, like destroying the world. I mean back to the ayin, to the idea of bitul, right? And that's what it means. That's what Chazal tell us. Hashem wanted to have a dwelling place down here. He wanted to be revealed down here, right? And we know that. What does tachtoni mean? Tachtoni means the lowest form of existence. There's no upstairs and downstairs by Hashem, but it means the lowest form of existence, an existence where Hashem is completely hidden, completely concealed, and completely not obvious, right? And that's where you want it to be revealed. How does that work? So it says, go to the next paragraph. He says, "Uklolos sam shocha zubi Rosh Hashanah." This general idea happens on Rosh Hashanah. Now, you know, every single day we say what we call Shir Shal Yom, right? The song of the day. What's the song of the day? A Friday. Song of the day is Hashem Moloch Geus Lovesh. Hashem got dressed, so to speak, in the cloak of sovereignty, of Malchus. Yeah? Now, here we have a question. We know the famous question. Why is Rosh Hashanah on the sixth day of creation, not on the first day of creation, right? Sorry? Oh, but what does that mean? So it explains like this. We just explained that creation takes place through Malchus, Tzimtzum, right? Hashem is running the world now also through Malchus. The truth is that we are revealing Hashem in this world, but not properly. Only when Mashiach comes, Hashem will be fully revealed, right? It's still a big Tzimtzum, but what we're doing is we're trying to crack the code. At least what we're doing is we're trying to reveal that this world that you see that is completely created through Tzimtzum and Hashem is completely hidden, and this mechanism of Malchus, we are revealing the Malchus a little bit. We're making Hashem's sovereignty and existence felt throughout the world by doing mitzvahs, by talking to other people, what Avraham Avinu did, he brought monotheism to the world, and so on and so forth, right? So it's not like, that's why we're still crowning him as Melech. In other words, he's still going to be a Melech after Rosh Hashanah. And before Rosh Hashanah, Melech means that he's only a little bit is being revealed, but at least he's being revealed, right? But the mechanism of Malchus really started the first day of creation. Right? So what do we mean that, what do we mean that on the sixth day of creation, Hashem got dressed in the concept of Malchus? No, he was in Malchus the first day of creation. So it's explained different ways, different places, but in this Maamar says a beautiful thing. You know, every day in Ashrei, when we daven, we say Ashrei, right? So we say, Malchuscha, Malchus kol elamim. Your Malchus is in the entire world. U'memshaltecha, and your rulership is in every generation, correct? We use two words, Malchus and Memshala. What's the difference? When Hashem is just ruling the world because he's in charge, but no one is really accepting him, that's called Memshala, it's not called Malchus. Malchus is a relationship. Yes, it's a relationship of Malchus. That he's interacting with us and we feel him and we're trying to reveal him. That comes only through a human being. The first 5 days of creation was not Malchus. It's the mechanism of Tzimtzum, but it's just total Tzimtzum. There's no revelation there. There's no one actually accepting him. Right? So it's Memshala, it's not Malchus. When the human being came and we learn that Adam Arishim, when he came, the Medrash says, he called out to the whole creation and he said, Boyu v'nishtachve, let's surrender, let's bow down to our Creator. Right? He started this process, which is why the first 5 days of creation we only see Elohim. We never see the word Yudke Vavke, only on the sixth day, once Adam Arishon was created. It says, Boyu masois Hashem Elohim. It's still Elohim, of course, the world's still run by Elohim, but at least we're getting the Yudke Vavke, the revelation shining through the Elohim. Right? And that's our job, and that's our job to make Dirbet Tachtonim. Of course, it will all lead to the ultimate revelation, where when Hashem brings Mashiach, Hashem won't be concealed at all. The world will still exist, but we'll have elevated the world through all our Voida to such an extent that Hashem will feel fully the presence of Hashem as we are existing now. But that Hashem will be completely revealed. And we'll be able to handle it, obviously, then. Yeah. So therefore, like this, when the world was first created, Hashem had a desire for Dira B'Tachtonim. There was no one yet to accept his rulership, so to speak. Even though it says in the Medrash, he consulted with the Neshamas, okay, whatever, but down here there's no one to... the first Rosh Hashanah, he did it on his own. But really what it wasn't proper Malchus, it was Memshala, not Malchus. Adam Rishon comes and it's Malchus, every Rosh Hashanah there's a new Malchus, Hashem withdraws the interest, we bring it a bend through the surrender, through asking Hashem, please become our king, through giving ourselves over, bitul, and so on and so forth, and then it happens again. Okay, that's how it works. That's why Rosh Hashanah is on the sixth day, not on the first day. The mission of the world is not Memshala. The mission of the world is Malchus, not Memshaltecha.
But the revelation can only be achieved through
man. Correct. Now, here comes another problem. Now I'm going to stop here and explain to you a beautiful thing. There's a theme that Chassidus talks about a lot, how Rosh Hashanah works. There's one problem. We gave a mashal before about a king, right? So Shaul HaMelech doesn't want to become a king, but the people say, no, please become a king, and we'll give ourselves over to you. All right. And there's relationships, so he's much, much higher. Ein melech b'lo am, you have to have a nation. A nation, by definition, means a separate entity, a lower entity, and that's how mashal works. The problem is, who are we? The mashal doesn't work. You see, when you're a melech, you're much higher than the people you're a melech over, correct? In the mashal. Okay, that's how melech works. You can't be melech on someone that's too close. You can't be melech on children, for example. But you have to be a melech on a separate nation. Let me ask you, can you be a melech of animals? Where a person says, you know what, I'm a king of animals. It's a mishagas. It doesn't make any sense, right? What does it mean to be king of animals? So here we have the following problem. The mashal, the analogy, works very beautifully until we come to the mechanism of re-motivating Hashem to become a king. Who are we? The richuk, the distance between us and Hashem, when a nation comes to the king, they're much lower. The king doesn't want to relate to them because it's a big downgrade. Nevertheless, when they give themselves over to the king is motivated to become the king. But at least they're in the same league. It's people. It's a person asking a person to become a king. Okay, the person is so much higher, right? But when we ask Hashem to become a king, it's not even an animal. It's, I don't know. You can't even describe what it is. Who are we? Who are we to get into the essence of Hashem and ask him to become a king? And the answer is, we have two relationships with Hashem. The answer is like this, that on Rosh Hashanah, we are asking him to become king on us as people in this world. But the reason that we can get to his essence and reignite his rotzen to become a king, his will to become a king, is because we have an neshama, because we're Yidden. That's why Rosh Hashanah we talk about Avinu and Malkeinu. From the point of view of being a body, a guf, what's the connection? How can you motivate the king to become a king? But in our guf, there's a neshama. That neshama is a spark that is always pure, deep down, right? In other words, here's where you have the tshuva coming together with this idea of kingship. On the one hand, we talk about Rosh Hashanah as a time to crown the king as king. But where's the tshuva? What's that got to do with tshuva? The answer is that's the essence of tshuva. The essence of tshuva is to go back to your real essence, the neshama, and connect your essence to the Eibishter's essence. And let your neshama take over and pledge that the guf will be completely surrendered. When the neshama, the essence of Yid's neshama, talks to the essence of Hashem, then you're getting to become the king. And that's what the bittul of Rosh Hashanah is. It's not just saying I'm going to do, my guf is going to do what you want me to do. No, it's a tshuva, it's a real tshuva. It's the highest level of tshuva, it's the essence of tshuva. Sorry? Yes, in a way. So it's a long answer. So I'll tell you what, no. It's similar to Ne'ilah. There's a difference, but you don't have time now. Maybe next week. You know what? Maybe next week I'll explain it. We'll talk about Yom Kippur. We'll see. No, it's the same thing happens in Ne'ilah, but Ne'ilah is higher only because Ne'ilah. So basically, where it's supposed to go, very quickly. Rosh Hashanah is about revealing the yichidu of the nefesh, the highest level of the neshama. But it's every other part of us disappears, and we just connect with that. What we get to by Ne'ilah is that we take all the details, all the layers of our, and we connect it back to the yichidu. So Ne'ilah is again the idea of the deepest part of the neshama, but with all the details. It's bringing the yichidu into everything else. Okay, but you can't start with that, because everything else of us is pretty messed up. So we've got to peel away. Rosh Hashanah, that's exactly what Rosh Hashanah is. We peel away. We don't talk about Averis, we don't talk about details, we don't talk about anything. We just talk about one thing. Be my king. Connect to me. Rule over the world. I'm home. I'm connecting. Shofar. That's a cry. Cry from the deepest level of the neshama. Right? Now how can we do that? We do that because that's the part of us that has never been corrupted. I want to share with you two ideas where you see this. This week's parsha, there's two very interesting psukim. It says, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Yidden, Hashem is giving you today the mitzvahs and so on. Then there's two psukim, and they use the same lashon. It says, Es Hashem ha'emarto hayoim, and Hashem ha'emircha hayoim. And Rashi says, we don't actually know what these words mean. It's a very funny language that's used very, very seldom in Tanakh. We have to work out what the translation is. Basically, the way Rashi explains it is that emircha means when you designate something precious. Precious, right? Says Rashi, Hashem says, you have designated Hashem to be your God, and Hashem has designated you to be his nation. Says Rashi, what does it mean? Can you just pass your chumash, do you mind? I'll get the words right. Thank you so much.
You can check with
me. No, it's very accurate. Maybe you will check with me. And you'll go searching in the Chumash. You know, it's actually today's portion, Slishi, I think it is. Yeah. I'll read you the translation. Um, You have distinguished Hashem today to be a God for you to walk in His ways, etc. Next verse says, and Hashem has distinguished you today for Him to be a treasured people. Right? Yisrael am segula, treasured people. There's an expression here in Rashi. The concept I'm going to share with you, you know, because I've done it in other ways, but it comes out in this most beautiful way. Can't find that. Somewhere they actually use the word oitzar, like a treasure. Yeah, segula. Segula means like a treasure, right? What's the idea? What's the reference to a treasure? What does it mean to be, should be Hashem's treasure? What does it mean? So Chassidus explains like this. Well, even today we see this, right? A king, a real king, right? He has a lot of resources. He's got an army. He's got ministers. He's got finance resources that he can help the people with. And he's got the king's treasures. I think the only moshav we have for today is like, what do they call it? The crown. What do they call it in England?
The crown jewels.
The crown, that's king. It's a symbol of being a king. You have a crown jewel, right? What do they do with those jewels? Nothing. Nothing. So what is it for? It's not for anything. It's an end in itself. A Yid, when Hashem chose the Jewish people to be His nation, He chose us to be an Am Segula, a treasure. Right? Now, obviously, on another level, He wants us to do stuff. He's given us jobs also to do. But even when we don't do the job, which we have to do the job, every Yid is a Zgula. Why? But he didn't do what he's supposed to do. The answer is he's not there to be a means to an end. The essence of a Yid is not a means to an end. The essence of a Yid is Hashem's crown jewel. That's it. The existence of a Yid is pure. Every Yid. There's a part of the essence of the Neshama that is Hashem's treasure. Which means it's not there to do something else. Even Torah mitzvahs. It's there to be a Yid. Now you reveal that through Torah mitzvahs, but it's and Torah mitzvahs have a function, and Torah betachtoinim, and all the rest of it. But we know this. At the very essence, a Yid is even higher than Torah mitzvahs, which is what tshuva is. We said this last week, or 2 weeks before, right? That's why we go to on tshuva means you go to a level where there was no get. Remember we talked about there's no divorce, right? Why? Because we go to a place that just we are our existence, what Hashem wants. That's it. Yeah. That's what we reach in Rosh Hashanah. And it's at that level that we have the right and the chutzpah to say to Hashem, become the king again. It's that level of closeness. Now, we're not saying become a king again over us as we are the treasure. But we have the right to us become a king over the world, how we just exist in the world. How we exist in a guf kashmi, in a physical body, we can't ask for it to be a king. We have such a distance, it's not even shy. But the part of our neshama that is at its root, at its essence, which is the oitzer, which is the treasure of Hashem, that is what we reach on Rosh Hashanah. That's the essence of tshuva. That's how we begin the whole process of return. We return. Tshuva also means to return to our own neshama, really, and to return to the essence of Hashem. And at that point, we can say to Hashem, yes, become a king, right? Which, by the way, just explains a very interesting thing. You know that Rosh Hashanah, the way Chassidus describes Rosh Hashanah is like, it's nothing like it, what should I say? It's like, it's playing so many beautiful ideas and so many deep ideas. On Rosh Hashanah B'Musaf, we say three special brachas. Malchiyos, Zichroinos, and Shofros, right? What's the pshat in this thing? What does it mean? So Malchiyos means very simple. Malchus is the idea, our job in Rosh Hashanah, to make Hashem king. But then we have the problem, but how? How do we get Hashem's essence to make Him king? The answer is Zichroinus. What's Zichroinus? Remembrance. Now, what's that idea? If you look at the Pesukim, it's a very beautiful Pesukim of Zichroinus. Actually, it's about Hashem remembering us as a child. We say, Haven Yakir Li Ephraim, we're a Yelet Shashuim, we're a playful child, Hashem plays with us. All these kind of descriptions. Why? Because there's a, that's a deeper relationship with Hashem. It's not Avinu, it's not Malkeinu, it's not Melech, it's more the son relationship, right? And also the idea of remembering, what does remembering mean? Remembering means, the definition of remember means there's something that's hidden. It's something distant, something mysterious. You understand? The only way to do the first bracha of Malchus is to get down to the relationship that's hidden. The deep relationship, the distant relationship. The one that we ask Hashem to remember. We need to remember, Hashem needs to remember. That forgotten relationship, the one that got buried under all the nonsense that we do. Which is that we still Hashem's child. We still his oitzah, we still his treasure. Then says the Gemara, what's the third bracha? Says, because the way the Gemara says, say the Malchios, say Zichron, that Hashem should remember you, which is now, we understand, it's linked to Malchios. And then, Uba Meh, says the Gemara, and how?
Hear my voice.
The Shofar. The Shofar. Not the voice, but the cry. Because the cry is deeper than the voice. The Shofar, the whole point of Shofar is that there's no words. Because it comes from a place that the Neshama can't even express itself. It comes from the, not the expression of the Neshama, but the being of the Neshama. And that's what, shofar is all about. That's the third bracha. That's how we do it. How do we do the zikrinus? Shofar. Cry from the kishkas of the neshama. I'll just add one more word. We know that in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we talk about the yud gimel midas harachem. 13 attributes of mercy. It's like the unbreakable one. Hashem will always have mercy upon us, right? Here's an unbelievable thing. No, I'm not going to build fun right now. But the Yud Gimel Midos Rachamim are revealed in Parshas Kisiso, after the golden calf thing. There's a whole vision Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, come and I'll pass by you. And anyway, he revealed the 13 minutes. And there it says, Hashem says, V'samti benikras hatsur. I'm going to place you, when I have this revelation, I'm going to put you in the cleft of a stone, the rock. Right. What's the reference to Tzur, the rock, the stone? So Chassidus explains this idea which we call Tzur HaChalomish, the flintstone. A stone that if you rub it, you'll bring out fire. So it talks about, in Chassidus talks about there's two kinds of fire. There's the fire, there's a revealed fire, which is like a coal that's burning. And then there's a hidden fire, like a flintstone. You don't see any fire, but deep down there's a potential for fire inside, right? Which means there's a concept of fire within, deep within the stone. They're very different. How they're very different? A coal is fire that you can feel. You see it, it's light, it's warm. In our Avodah to Hashem, that represents the conscious way of serving Hashem, which is very important, which you're supposed to have. The fire that burns, the fire that we have when we daven and we learn, we do a mitzvah, it's the fire of love between us and Hashem. Yeah. What's the downside of that fire? That fire can be very easily extinguished. For water, winds, anything that comes by, boom, it's gone. The flintstone, on the other hand, the Tzur HaChalomish, that fire you don't see. It's like a potential spark hidden somewhere. Right? You have to work very hard to bring it up. But on the other hand, you can do whatever you want to that stone. You can throw it into the river, you can soak it in water. That stone will never lose that potential, never lose that spark. Okay, you want to bring it out, you have to take it out, you have to dry it, but the fire is always there. That's how when Hashem reveals, yes, there are things of us that are relationship that are damaged throughout the year. But when Hashem reveals the Yigim B'Dus Rachmim, which is really about the super unbreakable bond between us and Hashem, it's the Tzur, the flintstone. No matter what we did during the year, that spark never left. And that's where we begin in Rosh Hashanah, and that's where why we have the power to ask Him to be King. That's the concept of the theme of Rosh Hashanah of Binyan HaMalchus. When we bring out that very deep connection, that's when we bring out the total, that's how we can reveal a total bittul to Hashem, total surrender, and that's where we can have the right to ask Him to become our King. Then of course we have to go to the other details and hold the Aseres Mitzvah. We have to develop it on all its layers and come back with all the specifics, which is why we have Yom Kippur and Aseres Mitzvah and so on. Good.